You'll be thrilled to know I found my notes. Actually, Rollo did. You probably saw him when he came down front, so we can go the full time. I do hope that you have a Merry Christmas. This is a very special time of year for me. I just like the fact that the world kind of stops for a while and grants us permission to behave in ways that it would be critical of our behavior at other times of the year. And I just hope that that we're able to use and enjoy that. Sometimes we go in search of the perfect Christmas tree, which becomes a symbol of the perfect Christmas. 49 years ago, yesterday, Terry and I were married. We decided that we didn't want to have a Christmas tree because there were too many other things going on, and so it just didn't make sense as you're moving in this little apartment to try to bring a Christmas tree in. But on Christmas Eve, the day, we got to thinking, you know, I'm really going to miss having a Christmas tree. So we went down to the Christmas tree lot. There was about six trees left. The guy that sold them was even gone. He just left a box and said, pay whatever you think is fair. So we got a little bitty, really scrawny little Christmas tree and put it in the car. And then we went by TG&Y. Some of you remember TG&Y. They had just a few sets of lights left, and I think the cheapest one that made the most sense was one with 300 lights. So we had this tree about this tall with about 300 lights on it. And, you know, it just looked like this neon sign, literally. It was amazing to me that it just wasn't Christmas unless you had some decoration to really kind of... This morning I'd like to share a story with you as an illustration, a long illustration. And I did some things with this story. I tried to rewrite it. I tried to tell it. And it just lost the power of the story in trying to do that. And so I am going to read most of it to you this morning. And I would ask that you be patient because it really is worth the journey and worth the trip. They say that if you creep into an evergreen forest late at night, you can hear the trees talking. If you listen very carefully to the whisper of the wind, you can hear the older pines telling the younger ones why they will never be perfect. They will always have a bent branch here, a gap there. Long, long ago, in the evergreen trees, there were some that were perfect. Each one took special pride in branches that sloped down from pointed top to evenly shaped skirt. It was especially true in a small kingdom beyond the mountains in Europe. Here, the evergreen trees were the most beautiful of all. For here the sun shone just right, not too hot, not too dim. Here the rain fell just enough to keep the ground moist and soft so that no tree went thirsty. And here the snow fell gently each day after day to keep each branch fresh and green. Each year as Christmas approached, the Queen's woodman would search for the ideal tree for that particular year. Out in the hushed forest, each evergreen hoped for this honor. Each tree tried to grow its branches and needles to perfection, to have them chosen to be the best of form and appearance. One tree, called Small Pine, grew near the edge of the forest and promised to be the most beautiful of all. As a seedling, it had listened carefully to the older trees, who knew what was best for the young saplings, and it had tried to grow very hard and grow just right. As a result, everything about Small Pine, from its deep green color to its curling tip to its evenly spaced branches, was perfect. In fact, he had already heard the other trees whispering about his superiority. One cold night, when a bright full moon glittered on the crusty snow, a little gray rabbit came hopping as fast as he could through the grove of evergreens. The rabbit's furry sides heaved in panic. From beyond the hill came the howling of wild dogs in pursuit of a hunt. The bunny, its eyes wide with fright, frantically searched for cover. But the dark, cold trees lifted their branches artfully from the snow and frowned. Faster and faster the rabbit circled in the excited howling of the dogs as it sounded more and more nearby. And then Small Pine's heart shuddered. When the terrified rabbit ran near, Small Pine dipped its lower branches down into the snow. And in that instant, before the wild dogs broke into the grove, The rabbit slipped under Small Pine's evergreen screen. He huddled safely among the comforting branches while the dogs galloped by and disappeared into the forest. In the morning, the rabbit went home to his burrow, and Small Pine tried to lift its lower branches back up. It strained and struggled, but the branches had been pressed down too long through the night. Oh well, Small Pine thought, no matter. Perhaps the woodsman wouldn't notice a few uneven branches near the ground in a tree so beautiful. Several days later, a terrible blizzard lashed the land. No one remembered having quite so much wind and snow. A brown mother wren had become lost in the storm. With feathers so wet she could barely fly, she went from one large evergreen to another looking for shelter. But each tree she approached feared the wren would ruin its perfect shape and clenched its branches together like a fist. Finally, the exhausted wren fluttered towards Small Pine. Once more, Small Pine's heart opened, and so did its branches. The mother wren nestled on a branch near the top, secure at last. But when the storm ended and the bird had flown away, Small Pine could not move its top branches back into their perfect shape. In them would be a gap forever. Days passed and winter deepened. The packed snow had frozen so hard that the deer in the forest could not reach the tender ground, which they needed to survive. Only the older, stronger deer could dig through the icy snow with their hooves. One little fawn had wandered away from its mother. He inched into the pine groves and noticed the soft, tender evergreen tips. He tried to nibble on them, but every tree quickly withdrew its needles so the tiny deer couldn't chew them. Thin and weak, he staggered toward Small Pine. Pity filled the tree's heart, and it stretched out its soft needles for the starving fawn to eat. But alas, when the deer was strong enough to scamper away, Small Pine's branches looked very ragged. Small Pine wilted in sorrow. It could hear what the larger, still perfect trees were saying about how bad it looked. It is so lost in despair that it doesn't even notice that the woodsmen have come to pick the perfect tree for the kingdom. As the royal sleigh, drawn by two white horses, slowly passed through the forest, careful eyes scanned the evergreens. Each was hoping to be the royal choice. When the queen saw Small Pine, a flush of anger filled her. How could such an ugly tree, with so many drooping branches and gaps, be allowed in her royal forest? She decided to have a woodsman cut it down and throw it away, and she nodded for the sleigh to drive on. But then she raised her hand for the sleigh to stop and glanced back at the little pine. She noticed the tracks of small animals under its uneven needles. She saw a wren's feather caught in its branches. And as she studied the gaping hole in its side and its ragged shape, understanding filled her heart. "This is the one," she said, pointing to Small Pine. The woodsman gasped. They did as the queen directed. To the astonishment of all, Small Pine was carried away to the great hall in the castle. There it was decorated with shimmering silver stars and golden angels, which sparkled and flashed in the light of 1,000 glowing candles. On Christmas Day, a huge Yule log blazed in the fireplace, and family and all the visitors danced around and sang together around Small Pine. And everyone who danced and sang around it said that Small Pine was the finest Christmas tree yet. For in looking at its drooping, nibbled branches, they saw the protecting arm of their father or the comforting lap of their mother. And some, like the wise queen, saw the love of Christ expressed on earth. As we think about what we give, we sometimes deceive ourselves into believing that it doesn't really matter or it doesn't really hurt us. And you may be in a place financially where perhaps you walk by somebody who needs help and you're able to help them and it really doesn't affect you a great deal. Maybe there are things that we do physically. Maybe there are things that we do emotionally. And unlike the tree, we find ourselves in really not having too much impact in our lives. But the thing I like so much about the story is The reality to all of us is when we give sacrificially, it costs us something. And it's not just the money that goes into our pockets. Where'd you get your gray hair? Well, the kids gave you your gray hair. We talk about that and laugh about that all the time. I read some years ago that after World War II, a number of years after World War II, they found a particularly high incidence of bald-headed men, more than was normal. So they did a little bit of research, did a little bit of studying, and found out that those old metal helmets had contributed substantially to killing the hair follicles that later would produce hair. We look at soldiers with PTSD, and I'm so grateful that we've now diagnosed that, we've now identified that, and there are a lot of things that are being done, although all of us would probably admit that there's so much more that can be done. I remember as a child, a man in our family who could just barely hold a glass, and a coffee cup was a struggle. And you could ask somebody in the family, as the young children would do, what's the matter? And the answer was, well, he's shell-shocked. He had an extreme form of what we now call post-traumatic stress disorder. People sacrifice. There are people who made the ultimate sacrifice with their lives. And we sometimes refer to the people who came back from war as the lucky ones. And I guess in some sense that may be valid. But frequently there's a great price that was paid, not only for being away from their family and being stressed, being in terrible situations, but literally the things that took so much of their lives. You could talk with Mike Marsalis. Mike was involved was a soldier in Vietnam, affected by Agent Orange, literally his entire life. Fascinating stories. When we start to share ourselves, it costs us something. Your stress level goes up. Your health may be impacted. There are all kinds of things that become prices that we pay in order to help somebody physically. Proverbs 20, verse 29. The glory of young men in their strength, gray hair, the splendor of the old. Leviticus 19:32, stand up in the presence of the aged, show respect for the elderly, and revere your God. I am the Lord. God said to Israel early, respect these people, acknowledge these people. Why? Well, they've given dramatically. I know others of you could share this same thought. One of the hardest things about growing older is not being able to do things physically. Especially when somebody asks you for help and you have to say, I can't do that anymore. I'd like to help, but that's not something I can do because physically, I actually can't do it. We can't be perfect financially either. When we give, it costs us something. In Matthew chapter 19, verse 27, Jesus would ask the disciples, are you going to leave me too? Peter answered him, we have left everything to follow you. What then will there be for us? Basically, Peter's saying, well, what's in it for me, Lord? I remember the day that you walked by our thriving fishing business and said, come follow me. And we walked away from our jobs. What's going to happen to us? Jesus said to them, truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits in his glorious throne, you who have followed me will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. And I'm sure that sounded wonderful to Peter, but yet he didn't have a real concrete understanding of likely what was involved there. And everyone who's left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or fields for my sake will receive 100 times as much and will inherit eternal life. Boy, that sounds good. So we give and we give, and God says it's going to come back to you. And sometimes you see facetious little things out there that indicate that this is going to all happen in our lifetime. Well, there's no promise for that at all. God may pay this recompense in another way, at another time, certainly within his own time. The last thing that I'd point out quickly this morning is we pay price emotionally. When you're helpful to someone else, when you're helping someone deal with their grief, deal with their frustration, deal with their stress, deal with the various issues of life, it takes something out of you. And that's not just automatically returned. We're worn down in that process. Paul says in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, starting in verse 28, I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and have gone without food. I have been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my concern for all the churches. Paul's experiencing all these traumatic and difficult things, and he says, I'm trying to deal with them one at a time the best way that I can, and yet sitting on his shoulder the entire process is his concern. And as you read various letters that Paul writes to these churches, you can see this concern that he has. He's kind of overwhelmed, literally, at times by what he's trying to communicate. When you give of yourself emotionally, that depletes your resources. And so you look at a person and you say, you know, that person's not as strong as I thought they were. That person isn't as mature as I thought they were. That person doesn't have it all together like I thought. And the reality is, that person has given and given and given to the place where they're depleted. They're depleted emotionally. They're depleted financially. They're depleted in their physical aspects. They're depleted in so much of life. They've just given so much that it takes an awful lot out of them. We may get to that place where we say, well, I just want to give up. I don't want to do it anymore. I'm not strong enough to do it anymore. I don't have the skill to do it anymore. And sometimes we're admitting what's true and what's right, but other times that's just coming out of frustration. I had the experience, and I've had this experience a number of times, but there's one particular person that I'm thinking here. A lady who in her 80s said, I don't want to be a Christian anymore. This price is too high. And as you looked at her, and as you talked at her, and as you'd known what she'd been through, it was easy to say to her, you're just worn out, you're worn down. And she'd say, yeah, but I don't want to do it anymore. I'm ready to quit. I'm ready to go be something else. Yeah, you're ready to go and live in God's eternal world. Hang on. Galatians chapter 6, verse 9 says simply, let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reach a harvest if we do not give up. I wish I could remember the boxer, an old boxer from the 1920s or so is what I'm guessing. Fought back in the days, and some of you who know much more about boxing than I do can correct me on this information, but he fought during the period of time when there wasn't a set number of rounds. You just fought till somebody won. And they asked him at one point in time, what's the secret to your success? And he said, fight one more round. Just one more round. And that's what he would constantly tell himself. And I want to encourage you this morning, when you feel like maybe you're sliding down, when you feel like you're feeling defeated, you know, there is that acknowledgement of, this has cost me something. I'm not who I used to be. I don't have all the things I used to have. And some of the reason is, I've shared that and I've given it away. And God's put stars in my crown and it's waiting for me on the other side. But right now, I can feel pretty frustrated. And that's the time when we say, I just want to go one more round. Matthew 6, 19 through 20, you've seen or read this so many, many times. Do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where moth and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. Paul said he had a crown of life waiting for him. He also said that we do too. This morning, I hope that as you look forward to whatever you're looking forward to for the next few days, that the reality is there that sometimes there are going to be people who need me. It may not be about me just enjoying the experience. It may be some moments of challenge and some moments of difficulty and some moments of sacrifice. And many of you are saying, yeah, I know that. I'd like to have it where it didn't happen maybe this year. And yet that's what God put us here to do. And that's what he gifted us to be able to respond to those needs. This morning, I'd encourage you to keep going, hang in, fight one more round, and recognize that it's not our perfection. It's how God makes us perfect as we enter the next life. This morning, if you need to respond, if there's anything you need to do to change your life, if there's any way that we can assist you in that process, we'd love to do that. We'd invite you to come while we sing this song together.